it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Unless you're buying De Bruyne or Haaland specifically, don't go there.
Hello everybody, welcome to Planet FPL, the world where everything revolves around Fantasy Premier League. My name is Sitch.
And my name is James.
I was watching you as I did the intro because I knew you had your eyes down.
Did you just try to stitch me up?
I was like, I'm just going to start it. I don't know, James is ready. But James is always ready. James is always on.
Excuse me?
You're ready to go, right? You never need any prep time. As soon as the mic is on, James is ready to go.
Best way, isn't it?
It is indeed.
How was your game week?
So I didn't miss the deadline. So that's a good thing. It started well. This midweek.
I've told everyone that you didn't miss it this time.
I think they should just scrap midweek football. Just play it on the weekend. Sod it. It was bad. But then I had a captaincy miss. So relative to the captaincy miss, it could have been worse. I decided to buy Haaland and Jota. The news was that he was fit, but I hadn't heard any of the news as to whether or not he would start or not. So I made my transfers quite early on the Tuesday. Again, being busy, I thought, let me just get it done. If I'm buying Haaland...
not doing anything, maybe.
If Haaland is fit, he will play. So I went with that assumption, which was obviously the wrong assumption. And I sold Salah for Jota. As much as I'd missed the haul the week before, Jota's still a good buy. Okay, this week's tricky against Arsenal, but then he's got Burnley, Sheffield United. Jota was the one for me. And I can run through with him, even if Salah's back. I still think I might stick with Jota. So I bought Haaland and I bought Jota. I decided to captain Haaland. The decision on getting Jota over Salah was easy because Salah's not going to play. For Haaland, I had the debate of whether or not to sell any of my strikers. Alvarez, Solanke, or Watkins. So Watkins, with Sheffield United this weekend, I said, nah, I can't sell him. Alvarez or Solanke, I then decided, well, look, they've got a double game week in 2 weeks or 3 weeks. Let's just say something happens to Haaland and... he gets a reoccurrence or something. I'm going to want Alvarez for the double. Whereas Solanke, yeah, he might score or whatever, but the likelihood of him going crazy and really hurting me is slim. Whereas if it goes the other way with City, you could get hurt.
Now, Forest, we'll see Solanke on Sunday, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. But then obviously Alvarez has returned a 13-pointer, whereas Solanke didn't.
Yeah.
So you could argue the case, Solanke outscored Haaland, but it wasn't a case of Solanke versus Haaland. It was a case of Solanke versus Alvarez. So I decided to go with Alvarez just as a kind of little bit of safety backup for the double game week that's coming up. And I'm fairly happy with that. So 48 points isn't great. Areola with a three-pointer. He does pick up these little save.
He has to be playing in goal for you, doesn't he?
Tell me about it. I mean, he's got to be Hammer of the Year at the moment. I don't know. Trent wasn't back. Came off the bench, didn't he? So that was a bit of a disappointment. Spurs conceded a couple of goals, so nothing from Porro. Nothing from Gabriel from that late goal that they let in. So defensively was a bit of a washout. Richarlison with his goal. Jota with his goal. Alvarez with his returns. And Ollie Watkins. That was your lot. I did bench trips away at Villa, who we talked about. Villa, best home record. Newcastle, worst away record.
We'll talk about it.
So benching Trippier, I don't regret at all, to be honest with you. And obviously he didn't keep a clean sheet. It was just the assist and BPS. So yeah, that was it for me. 48 points. It was a red arrow. Not a big red arrow, maybe 100K. So down to 846. But first red arrow in 6 weeks. So
blimey.
Yeah.
It's not bad when you miss a deadline after time.
Yeah, yeah, very true. I only missed the one.
Someone's going to make the smart comment of it. It's easy to have green arrows where you were, mate.
Yeah, true. But did you have a green arrow?
No.
Well, okay.
Yeah, but my rank's better than yours, so.
It is.
Oh, gosh, like I cut the kids. My rank's better than yours. You see, my dad's bigger than your dad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I should add, actually, I benched Trippier because I had inside information, and so come at me if you want to.
What was the inside information?
I had none.
Oh, you didn't.
I just didn't know if people were going to call me out on what did you know about Trippier being benched that you didn't share.
Yeah, can we fuck you stop all. Calling content creators out? Like, seriously, particularly the stuff that's nasty. Like, leave it out. You got nothing nice to say, don't say nothing. My mum told me that. So,
and quite often, just don't say nothing.
Yeah, just don't say anything. Yeah, yeah, correct. Yeah, yeah. I had a drop this week.
Random point. I think the world would be a better place if
we deleted Twitter.
There was a 6-hour delay on tweets. So if you wrote a tweet and hit send, it didn't get published for 6 hours because it'd give you time to delete it.
But most people just want to be... most people's not correct. A lot of people just want to be horrible because they can be horrible and they're behind a keyboard. So,
yeah.
20K drop for me this week down to 216K, 55 points. Similar story to you with nothing defensively, basically. I, like you...
Did you have the same defence as me, almost? Player for player?
Yes, it is exactly
Areola,
the same, actually.
Areola, Porro, Trent, Gabriel.
Yep. Exactly the same, actually. I decided Monday night, I talked myself into the idea of wanting to buy Haaland. And my decision on that was, I'd kind of decided I was going to do it blindly, unless Pep definitively said... Nah, not tomorrow, basically. And the thinking behind that was that so many people wouldn't go there, we'd now have the most dangerous player in the game as a mega differential.
Agree. That was in my thoughts as well.
Yeah. And I wasn't sure at that stage if I was going to captain him, but I was pretty sure that as long as Pep didn't say he's out again, I was just going to go there and get it done. Because most of us have known anyway, right? It's like... get him when the opportunity arises. As soon as I know he's starting, I want to get him. You almost don't want to be a game behind that. That's why a lot of people now be like, should I buy him this week? Should I wait an extra week? Don't know the answer. Obviously, look, timestamp this, it's kind of 11-ish in the morning. Pep's press is this afternoon. By the time you hear this or watch this, he may have already done it, and therefore you might have more information than we've got at this moment in time. But then after, obviously, Pep spoke, and he was like, yep, apparently, that was so funny, he said, apparently he's available tomorrow. Don't you know, mate? I'd kind of then decided, yeah, do you know what? Armband's going on him.
Okay.
I'm going to go for it, fully in the knowledge of knowing there's every chance he wouldn't start. I started my deadline stream at 5 o'clock and I said, look, this is my plan. My confidence in him starting is just a shade over 50%, basically. But I was prepared to chance it because of the upside of, imagine if he starts and his EO's under 50%, I've got him captain to Burnley. That was the risk I decided I wanted to take. Then there was obviously murmurs before deadlines. Lazy FPL had said they believed at 20-6, they said that they believed that Haaland wasn't going to start. But it was only belief. It wasn't, he's definitely out. And at that point, I decided, you know, I'm going to still stick to my guns. Then Tony FPL, who obviously kind of had the info when Haaland originally got injured as well, had said, look, KDB is a better captaincy choice than Haaland this week, which reading between the lines was KDB's going to start tomorrow and Haaland's not. Now, I've obviously already committed to the transfer at that point because I made it about 5 o'clock. Had I waited, I obviously wouldn't have. But I'm sitting there at 3 minutes to deadline and then it's like, right, there's two different bits of information saying he's not playing. So I moved to captaincy. I still left him in the team. It was never a thought in my mind to put him on the bench, even though I was benching Cole Palmer. I was like,
if I had that information, I would have put the armband on Jota over Haaland.
What, Jota captain again, Suj? Yeah, how many points does this cost you now?
That would have cost me 7. So I would have had the same points as you this week. Same as Foden over.
I captained Foden over Watkins was essentially my two choices, which has been a point difference. Don't make no difference, basically. So I had Foden 12, Watkins 7. Saka 10. I started Bailey over Palmer because I was really confident that Villa would do well against Newcastle. That proved to be incorrect, but what a difference he made when he came on. Picked up 4 points. At Alvarez is 13. I think the additional point to say about selling Solanke rather than Alvarez, because I sold Solanke as well, was I couldn't bear the idea of going Alvarez to Haaland and then Alvarez starting.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was obviously a probability that that could happen. So it was much about that as well.
Safety net.
Yeah, kind of. So, yeah, 55 points for me. I fully intend to roll a transfer. We've already released our Patreon pod and discussed it quite a bit this morning. But I'm probably going into this week with something like Bowen and Gusto on the bench. So when it's that strong, there's no real justification to be forcing anything, even if I had an injury in the team news today. And it's a good week to roll, right? There's lots to learn. The Villa-Chelsea game Wednesday night. Salah's fitness. If we're going to get any information on this Liverpool-Luton game, which sitting here on Friday now at time recording with no announcement, we've seriously got to start thinking this might not be happening, I think.
Okay.
I think if it goes beyond deadline tomorrow and there's no announcement, then we become into the unlikely zone rather than the likely zone. I do still think it could be announced next week. What I would recommend, if people want kind of a real detail, what might happen with Liverpool-Luton and the prospect for a treble game week, which might not be as good as it sounds later in the season, listen to the first 10 minutes of my Ask James stream yesterday. I just spend 10 minutes literally on that, so I don't particularly just want to repeat that all over again. There's lots to learn this week anyway. We might definitively know if Haaland's back on the team Monday's loads. There's loads of reasons to roll a transfer this week if you have the luxury to do it. I realise not everybody will be able to do so. Captain for me, this week's probably going to be between Haaland and Watkins, I think. I think I might just go Watkins because I think there's enough. As City play Monday, not sure there'll be enough information going around on Haaland. Plus,
but it gives him more time to get
for
right.
For me, obviously, because I do the deadline streams, I do have the kind of luxury of being focused on the game in the minutes right up to deadline. So if there's news, I'll probably hear about it. Someone will likely tag me to a tweet and say, James, look at this or whatever. But tomorrow, I'm obviously going to Goodison. I don't really, you know, if I've the luxury to be looking at 10 to 11, great, but I don't really want to be doing it. I'm going on an away day with Tottenham. So it might be that I just go with Watkins captain, which I know, yeah, I've been down this route against Sheffield United before, but I think that'll probably be with what I've got the safest and best option, I think, possibly for me. So Watkins, Hall and captaincy, a few headaches, like I said, might be like likes of Bowen and Gusto on the bench this week, possibly.
I'm going to go with Erling Haaland.
You're going to go?
I feel like I've gambled going early with him. I don't think everyone will steam straight back into him as this week either.
But so that's the point. It's going to be enough of a differential anyway.
Do you reckon the EO will be
to not over. Take the risk? Mm. I thought more people would have taken the risk to get him in straight away. I think the fact that what's changed as well, I said this on my stream yesterday, if Alvarez had blanked, I think we'd all be sitting there going, I think Haaland's back in Monday night. Now he's got some minutes. Because Alvarez has done well, it would feel a little harsh to maybe take him out the team on Monday night. Plus, obviously, there's minutes in KDB. They've got everyone fit. It almost feels like don't need to take the risk on it. It's still Brentford away. It's not like a huge gimme. Their record in against big opponents is good. I mean, they beat City home and away last year.
So
it doesn't feel necessary. I know I want to do it the same because I want the upside on it, but it feels like I don't need to. And I think if we consider Watkins, if you are the sort of person that thinks about EO, if there isn't clear information on Haaland, the fact you've got Arsenal, Liverpool playing each other, and look at Watkins kind of EO still being kind of 90%-ish at home to Newcastle, and there was hardly anybody captaining him as far as I can see. There'll be more this week. So he might even be, if you do factor that sort of thing into your thinking, he might even be the EO play, Watkins.
Okay. We're going to rattle through some of these games, James. Obviously, the full set of fixtures to get through. We do know it's a tight turnaround between now and the deadline tomorrow, and people may want to listen to other pods as well as us to get a more balanced opinion. But yeah, so we'll try and keep it as fantasy relevant as we possibly can, and help you with the upcoming decisions. We've still got eyes on the 25 double, depending on who you're going to buy and sell, the blanks in 26 and so on. So, you know, certain teams may get a little bit more love from an FPL point of view than others. Forest 1, Arsenal 2. Say it the right way, I should. In the end, it was a dominant Arsenal display in terms of they had just 73% possession.
A dominant without being dominant in
well, this is
in,
what they've done for quite a while.
They not looking like they were going to destroy the opposition.
Yeah, the jabbing away to keep a nice jabbing's distance good, yeah. Rather than going in for flurries of combos.
Oh, they were never under threat of like losing the game or anything like that.
No, but when you can see the late goal and it's 2-1, you do get squeaky bum time, whoever you are, yeah, wherever you're playing.
I watched the first half and the last 10 minutes. I had intended to watch the first 20 minutes of Villa Newcastle, was far more interested in that, to decided to stick with it rather than go back to the Forest Arsenal game. I mean, Arsenal had 81% of the ball in the first half, completely camped in Forest half, basically. I've seen these games before involving Nuno Santo teams. There's not a huge amount to learn from them. It should be said that Forest, despite playing very negatively, you would say, then negative tactics were working, right? Because for all Arsenal's ball dominance, they never actually looked like scoring, particularly in that first half. And it became a bit of a slog. Obviously, they go ahead, the game gets a little bit easier.
Changes game state.
Saka the second, of course. So I think for Forest, probably key notes would be, obviously, Awoniyi back with a goal. Anthony Elanga came on as a sub. So that alone, those two things, is going to make them a little bit stronger for the weekend offensively at Bournemouth. Just note on the two goals, by the way. I know Matt Turner got a lot of stick for the first goal. What is Gonzalo Montiel doing on the first goal? I know he gives the ball away for the second, but on the first goal, like if you watch him, he just moves out of position and Arsenal got a throw-in.
Yep.
And they take a throw-in down the line and they're in. It's really bizarre. And there was a lot of Forest players getting linked with moves yesterday. They have bought a new goalkeeper. So if you are relying on Matt Turner, surely you're not relying on Matt Turner. Matt Sells, who was formerly at Newcastle when they were in the Championship going back some time ago, has joined the club. He will almost definitely go in as number one because the other two goalkeepers are shite. So that Turner's going to lose his place. I think I'm not saying it'll be this weekend necessarily, but Forest haven't invested in a goalkeeper when they've got Turner and Vlachodimos to just come in as second
just
and third.
Just got Vlachodimos
when
in the
they've
summer.
Got people looking at their PSR reports and stuff like that anyway. For Arsenal, I know Clayton thinks there might be a few changes on Sunday. He has a suspicion that Jorginho might come into the team and Declan Rice might play a more advanced position under that circumstance. Smith Rowe, who played,
yep,
wouldn't, and neither would Kai Havertz. Martinelli did start. I know, to be fair, Clayton did think that Trossard would probably start, didn't. It's a big game for Arsenal on Sunday. The creativity issue just lingers with them.
It does.
Like, they're doing
it?
Well in terms of results and stuff, but you don't really feel like they're gonna blow anyone away at the moment.
No. And when the likes of Liverpool and City are in such good form, it's relentless that you've got to be up there. Look, they won. They got the points. That's all that will matter for now. But there is a kind of 5-point gap between them and Liverpool. If that turns to 8... you can't see them catching Liverpool.
No, I don't think Arsenal can afford to lose on Sunday.
No, agreed. Fulham 0, Everton 0. If you'd have just said to me, oh, mate, Fulham-Everton played a 0-0 draw down at the Cottage, I'd be like, well, I'll skip that one. But when I looked at the stats, I mean, XG of like nearly 4 between the
don't
two of
them. Don't
worry
about that. Just count the shots.
10 big chances between the two of them.
Was it 10, yeah?
4 for Fulham, 6 for Everton.
Everton had 6 big chances.
Let me...
That is alarming.
4
right.
Big chances for Fulham, 4 missed. 6 for Everton, 6 missed.
Staggering.
And there's no penalties in that, is there?
No, of course not.
So there was, like, as in a missed penalty could have been involved in that XG or those big chances.
The game featured, arguably, the two most consistent FPL keepers in the game. Leno and Pickford are good, right?
They are.
I don't think that neither are in too many teams at the moment. I think Pickford, I want to say, might even be the highest scoring goalkeeper now, I think. It's bonkers. I think Everton have got the most clean sheets and they're in the bottom three. Yeah, go figure. Welcome to the Premier League.
Minus 10 has something to do with that, James.
But I think most of us probably haven't got them because of Areola, the Bravka, maybe even previously Turner.
Pickford is the highest scoring goalkeeper.
Leno can't
James.
Be far off.
He's third, only 6 points behind. And sandwiched in between Pickford and Leno is an Alisson De Becker.
Yeah.
Areola's obviously.
What price? Leno and Pickford, 4.5 each, is it? Or Leno's 4.8 now.
4.8 for Leno, 4.5 for Pickford. But then Areola's sitting there on 80 points, only one behind Leno.
The thing is with Pickford as well, a lot of people started with him. And through that really good run of fixtures at the start of the season, he didn't do naffle. So everyone sold him to Areola, and then it spanned on points. So I think, look, I wouldn't be diving to go to them because they're performing better. They cost a bit more than Areola and Dubravka, and I think the rotation between the two is still fine. You're not going to look at, if you've got that and you've got Dubravka home to Luton this week, despite Luton's very good form, I don't think, oh, I need to get Pickford now because he's got Tottenham at home. Like, you're not.
No.
So they're largely going to keep getting ignored, but they're both really consistent. Like, so for anyone who's got either, they'll be sitting there telling you they're very happy with that, and that's perfectly understandable. Yeah, was it 48 shots or something in the game? Absurd.
A ridiculous
number.
What do you think for Fulham now with Breuer joining?
Breuer,
yeah,
the big transfer of deadline day.
I mean, Jimenez out and Breuer straight in.
Well, we'll see what Marco Silva says later today, but Diop went off in the second half. Raul Jimenez went off at halftime. Both hamstring injuries. Silva did say,
so that decision might be made.
Silva
for him,
did
really,
say
yeah.
on Tuesday night in relation to Jimenez that it definitely wasn't going to be days. It would be weeks, whereas he didn't clarify that sort of thing with Diop. I'm suspicious that the Jimenez injury might be really bad. Like, hamstrings can quickly turn into 3 months. You think 3 months from now is end of April, might nearly finish his season, mate. Mm. And that would be completely understandable why they've obviously gone in for Breuer, which is a loan deal that works for everybody. Breuer...
Is there an option to buy in there? No.
Is he an option to buy?
No, is it an option to buy in the deal?
No, I don't think so. Certainly okay. not an obligation, right. I don't think.
Fine.
How many minutes slash games he plays influences how much money Chelsea get out of the deal. I think Chelsea have looked at it and decided that he's going to depreciate in value if he stays with them. And value is quite important to them at the moment. If he goes and has 3-4 good months with Fulham, they'll get more for a transfer from him right. in the summer. Because his spell at Southampton feels like a long time ago now, right?
Mm.
And obviously he had the really bad injury following that. So I think if he went and scored 6-7 goals between now and the end of the season, Chelsea will get nearer the value that they want in the summer. Whereas at the moment, people aren't going to take the chance because they've not seen enough of him in the last 18 months. He's definitely an option for FPL subject to this Jimenez news.
Correct.
You just think about it logically. If Jimenez was ruled out for 3 months, Breuer's going to come in. He's going to be the number 9. And you know that they cover 26. You know that they cover 29. And it's potentially that the value that enables you, you know, you go hypothetical, I'm not saying this week, but go into 24, for example, and go Solanke to Breuer, put 2 million in the bank, that might be your bit of difference that gets you towards Mo if he's back next week, right?
4.9 he's sitting at. He's still listed as a Chelsea player in the game at the moment. But
it's definitely gone through 100%.
Yep.
They'll update that later today, no doubt. So, yeah, Amanda Breuer, yep, absolutely on radar. I think he would now have to be, depending on that Jimenez news, if it's bad, he'd become the cheap forward of choice. He'd have to, I think. Despite Adebayo's hat trick this week.
Sure, you wouldn't rather buy Elijah Adebayo? Luton 4. Brighton 0.
I've already sold him in Sky. I'll take my points and run, mate.
Yeah.
Look, great return. And obviously, the one difference with Adebayo versus Jimenez, we spoke about Jimenez covering 26 and 29. Adebayo could have this double, right?
Yes.
So it's another one that would find you the money again. If it gets announced, Liverpool-Luton for 25, you just need to check yourself on the amount of Liverpool-Luton, Chelsea-Tottenham assets you obviously have for 26. If you'd have the luxury...
It's cheaper than Breuer by 0.1.
Well, of course, and what you could also do is you could go Adebayo for 3 weeks, 23, 24, 25, or even come back to it. And then when he blanks in 26, just chain him off at a similar price to Breuer. Mm-hmm. You could do that. You could do it that way, couldn't you?
Yep.
So, yeah, to be considered. A bit disappointed for many. I think that probably Alfie Doughty, despite a 4-0 win, didn't get any returns. But I think, I don't want to say this has been coming for Luton, but they've been playing differently over the
he
last six
He did get a clean
so.
Sheet, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which
still
is
returning.
A return, and it's probably the return you wouldn't have expected against Brighton, to be honest with you.
I'm just surprised. If you'd said to me they're going to win 4-0, I would have thought he'll haul.
Yeah,
That's all I mean by that. Ross Barkley is again a bit sore of the game Tuesday night, playing really, really well. I think can be considered in that midfield area. I keep an eye on Ogbene, though, who obviously His XG will look absolutely monstrous from this week gone because he ends up scoring a tap-in from 2 yards. He's playing right wing back. He was really good at Burnley. Reports suggest that he played really well again. Luton have bought, though, a new wing back, Hashioka. And he has been priced in at 4.0.
Okay, and it's cheap.
We're not saying he's going to go straight in, but he might do. Luton have invested in him.
Definitely on the right-hand side.
That's one to keep.
I doubt he will stay out on the left.
Yeah. And that's one to keep an eye on, which from that perspective as well, this new signing plus Ogbene's form is concerning for those who are sitting there with Issa Kabore. People will be. And there's, I don't want to say there's no chance of him getting back in, but I would think the way Ogbene and Doughty have been playing, plus this new signing, it's probably looking unlikely. You might need to think about your solutions for that. For Brighton, obviously, extremely bad day at the office. It is, believe it or not, Suj, 3 league wins from their last 16 league games. He doesn't feel like it, I think, because their progress in Europe and the FA Cup. But we'd be scrutinising it quite badly, I think, if it wasn't a Roberto Di Zerbi team. So we should. And they have had bad injuries. But whatever Brighton team rocks up should not be getting beat 4-0 at Luton, right?
Agreed. Yeah, definitely not. I was going to ask you, how's the... The love affair with De Zerbi now, is he kind of, the shine has been knocked off a little bit?
Well, of course it has, because ultimately you can play, you know, teams are now used to it. You know what you're getting. I always say it, right? You don't turn up 100% against Brighton, you're going to get beat. But teams treat them seriously like a big opponent and big opposition because of the tactical stuff that they input. If you watch the kickoff of the game back, Luton just go for them from the start.
They scored 2 goals in a minute, mate. So,
well, essentially, obviously. Yeah, because they scored after 20 seconds and then they scored 40 seconds after the restart again. So basically, we're 2-0 up inside a minute, yeah. And then for Brighton, you're obviously chasing the game from now. João Pedro, we expect an update on later today.
I would say
he's very unlikely to play their big game against Crystal Palace tomorrow. And it does now become a big game, because it's important to the Brighton fans, and I'm not suggesting that if the result goes badly, people start questioning De Zerbi's future. Not at all, but I think there'd be a few going, well, come on now. Now we're playing once a week and stuff like that. The excuses need to stop. I realise it's Tuesday, Saturday this week. But they've got the same time difference between Palace. What I mean is they've not been overly exerted with the fixtures over this January period because of the break. So it's time for them to step up a little bit now. I think there's every chance Ferguson may play tomorrow if Pedro's out for a while. You need to be aware that Ansu Fati's really close. Julio Enciso is not a million miles away either. Mitoma, by the way, came on for Japan on Wednesday.
Right.
So we would assume as and when they go out,
He'll be back and fit.
So I'm obviously hoping Japan win this weekend and win the semi, because checks notes, yeah, coming to Tottenham next week. I don't need to see Mitoma.
And Estupinan was obviously a popular choice. He's obviously playing now, but whereas previously, if you just said to me, right, Estupinan's fit and back in the Brighton team, I would be trying to think of a way to get back to him as quickly as possible. With their current form, he's not really that much of a priority for me.
That's a great fixture to go into. I'd say it concerns. That's not the first time this season that he's taken him off at half-time in an away game. He also did it when they got battered at Villa. And this is where the criticism will get labelled out with a De Zerbi. That's now in the space of the last year. 5-1 against Everton, 6-1 at Villa, 4-0 at Luton. Like, it's not acceptable, really.
Yeah, if we'd have been sitting
if
last
we're going
summer,
to put them on a pedestal where we talk about them as a really good side, we have to do it the other way and start questioning stuff when it goes wrong. They've been flitting the last couple of weeks between a back four and a back three. You'll note Van Heck and Julio both played essentially either side of Lewis Dunk. James Milner had started as essentially like a right wing back. He obviously went off injured really early in the game. Jack Hinchwood, who's played a lot recently, got a break. I'm sure he'll come back in tomorrow. But there's not a guarantee at the moment with Brighton, I think partly because of the injuries, in fairness, whether you're getting a back four or a back three. And it's also not going to be clear necessarily whether you're getting Estupinan as a left-sided centre-back, a left-back or a left-wing-back. Now, in that game against Luton, it would have been the position that you want, but you wouldn't have been looking at getting anything out of it. The Brighton people that we know, like on our Patreon network, have said the score wasn't a fluke. It was thoroughly deserved. Not only that Luton won, that by the scoreline as well was deserved.
Crystal Palace 3, Sheffield United 2. Now, Sheffield United went ahead twice in this game, and then to end up, like, Palace did dominate possession, and they had more of the chances, and probably, yeah.
Oh, those are words you've never said before. Palace dominated possession.
Oh, yeah. But Sheffield United, we talked about this on the Patreon pod, right? 2 goals in this game, 2 goals in the cup game, 2 goals against us.
Winless,
albeit
over the throw.
A penalty at the end that was a bit dubious, but still, they've started getting goals.
Yep.
They're leaking in the other end at the moment, and Wilder really needs to fix that.
Yeah, they're being a little bit more expansive because you're running out of games, right? And you're getting to a point with Sheffield United where soon draws is just going to be irrelevant. You've got to start winning games of football now. Were they 10 points, Suj?
9 off Luton. That's big.
I mean, as it stands...
And Luton have a game in hand.
As it stands, you can't see the bottom two staying up.
No.
Because it's not even just... With Luton...
Burnley's 7 points.
With Luton, you look at Luton, you think... You might start thinking, well, I think Luton will stay up. And then you stop. Well, who does go down instead? Say Everton get their points back and Forest don't get a points deduction. Is it Brentford? Is it Palace? Like Palace, if at least saying, is they a fit, they're going to be fine, aren't they?
Yeah.
So one of our patrons described it the other night as like, Elise and Eze are fit. They play like a top half team. If you take them out, their certainty is for relegation, basically. It does feel a bit like that with them. They've bought...
They were fit in this game, mind, and they managed to win it, though.
Yeah, I mean, look, the quality of goals
although
in this
both
game,
went off.
I loved the Sheffield United goal, by the way. You know, no Palace player touched the ball. Brilliant play and flick inside from McBurnie, the pass from Hamer, and then the finish from Ben Brereton-Diaz, really good to give them the lead. He, by the way, should be fit for the weekend. Chris Wilder said that taking him off, he actually described it, Chris Wilder, as saying it was the right thing to do. They picked it up as a, take him off as a precautionary. They expect him to be okay for Villa tomorrow. James McAtee, I think, is the one to really keep an eye on. He's so cheap. If you really need to find that bottom end of midfield money, he's playing in a position where he's getting into really advanced positions on basically off the right-hand side at the moment. And because he's playing for Sheffield United, with respect, you're never thinking, oh, I need to play him. Or someone like Garnacho could give you that headache of a benching dilemma. McAtee would just give you really nice cover, I think. And there might be ones like Luton in 24 where you deem that you do want to play him, for example. McAtee is of interest to me. If I need to find money, Suj, I think I would look down that route. For Palace,
he's a good player. I think...
he was the City player.
I just don't trust the team. You know, even when we played them, he was clearly the standout in terms of quality on the ball. But I just don't trust the team.
It's probably
enough.
More the point, if you're looking for a sub 4.6 million midfielder as an example, it's probably the
he's
one.
He's the go-to for sure. Yeah.
I wouldn't say he's the go-to for sure.
Who else would
let
you
me
put
say
in the
he's probably the one that I would go to.
I mean, who else is even in that bracket as an option?
Tommy Doyle might be one to keep an eye on. João Gomes was quite lively when he came on for Wolves yesterday. He's obviously come back from suspension. He's not a lot there.
No.
So McAtee will play the majority of the games. For Palace, I know there was a few. Did gamble Eze. My point was I'd probably rather Elise once they're both back fit. And I didn't want to go Eze because I didn't think Elise would be back. I didn't think they'd risk him. They did. Eze said himself after the game that he was fine. He also said that Elise was fine. So we're relying at the moment on Ebe Eze's word that the two of them should be fine. They're playing Brighton. If they're 70-80%, they will play. They'll risk them in that fixture, I should imagine. And Palace are obviously going to be a dangerous team under that circumstance. You've suddenly got Estupinan going against Elise. It would probably be a really interesting battle to keep an eye out for. They've bought Sam Walton from Blackburn, who's a midfield player. I've not seen a huge amount of him. But I know a few people keep asking about Chris Richards. He's 3.9. I'd been covering that holding midfield role. He played right-sided of a back three at Arsenal. On Tuesday, he played at right-back. Palace have also bought a right-back, Munoz, who wasn't available to play on Tuesday. So I would say he will become a dangerous one. And not to the extent that like people who own need to sell dramatically. But if you look at Palace's fixtures, Suj, a lot of people are looking for cover in 26 and 28, respectively. And I think they've got, I want to say, Burnley at home and Luton at home are the two games. So if you're looking for something specifically in those 2 weeks, and people will be looking for nice things in 26, then I think Palace kind of appeal from that perspective. That means Eze and Elise should be kept on radar. I wouldn't be guaranteeing that Richards is going to stay in that team because he's been shunted around positions now as well. And they've got a new right back and a new midfielder. And obviously played without him in midfield at the weekend. So that experiment might be over now. What have they got, Suj, fixtures?
Yeah, Luton and...
It's Luton and Burnley.
Why 28 specifically, just for the people that are thinking that 29 is the blank?
It might just be down to the fixtures in that week. You know, things like that's when City and Liverpool play each other. I think Villa and Tottenham play each other. So it's probably not a kind of a good looking week for perhaps. If you're sitting there with Moreno, Porro, Trent, I don't know, Walker, and as long as you don't bench him, then you're probably looking at that week going, oh, I might want something different defensively. And I think those two fixtures together means that a few are keeping a kind of close eye on Palace at the moment. So, but it would only for me be, if I need to go down that route, to be honest, I would, by that point, I would just pay for Anderson or Gay if that's what I wanted to do.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night, ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end,
what will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Villa 1, Newcastle 3. So turn around on the books here. Newcastle pulling a leaf out of West Ham's book almost. They're less than 40% possession, but managed to
game state a lot to win. Do with that.
Yeah, exactly. Getting ahead early was the one, and we should have all gone with Fabian Schär, right? Triple captained him this week.
He would have been on a lot of benches for, to be honest, people who owned, the majority of people would have benched him, and perfectly understandable. I thought Villa would have been comfortably. I take no shame in saying that. I said that on the pods we did on Friday. And then, to be honest, I watched Newcastle at Fulham Saturday night, and despite it obviously being a good result and a good victory, they didn't impress. And I'm looking at them with a high energy that Villa play without Joel Linton and being a bit fearful for them. Actually, they found their levels, and they thoroughly deserved the lead that they found themselves into, particularly in the first half. They really, really got at Villa, particularly down Villa's right-hand side. Gordon was a menace.
Did they have a problem down that right-hand side, Villa? Because Bailey, you said, improved the team when he came on. Diaby's been in and out. Do you think that's where to attack
him? I was surprised that Cash and Moreno were both in the team against a strong opponent like that. I think what he obviously wanted to do, they had major success last year using, I want to say, midfielders in wide areas, particularly with Jacob Ramsey. Had a really good, did a dual job when Villa beat Newcastle 3-0 last year. Ironically, that was Newcastle's worst away performance last year. This one has probably been their best away performance, bar, you can argue, the 8-0 at Sheffield United. But I think what he wanted to do was get McGinn and Tielemans into these 10 positions and kind of really, really disrupt, and obviously get both fullbacks quite high. The problem was it was playing into Newcastle's hands in terms of Newcastle on transition.
Leaves a lot of space behind, doesn't it?
On Villa, yeah. And I think obviously Constant had been playing at right back a lot. He moved into centre back, caused a bit of indecisiveness. Clement Longley is the natural one to play left-sided centre-back at the moment. I don't know if there was a problem with Diogo Carlos, because he can play that position. When we analysed him, when Villa bought him, we said, look, he can play left and right-sided centre-back. So I'm surprised he didn't get a nod over Longley. Pau Torres is beginning to become a miss. But their structure works much better when they have one defensive full-back and one very offensive one. Also, I think Cash wouldn't have played if Bailey had played, which is something I've covered several times over, that there's a link there where that's like, it's too much on that side. What you want is someone who's just going to back Bailey up and essentially give him the ball. He came on with the game dead at 3-0, and he genuinely was electric when he came on. He just kept getting at it and just turning and running at him, and he got Dan Byrne worried massively. Eddie Howe, give it 10 minutes, he went, no more of that. He brought Livramento on at left back and went to a back five to see the game out. But for that 10 minutes, Bailey created the goal for Watkins. He also created another goal for him, which was very narrowly offside, but obviously the correct decision. And he was just a menace. And if you'd have watched the game, you'd have gone, how have they not started him? Unai Emery said after the game that he had a back complaint and wasn't 100% fit. So I've got a dilemma now going into this weekend, for example, where I've obviously still got him. Do I start him at Sheffield United, or do I start basically Jared Bowen at Manchester United? And I think I'm going to punt Bailey again, because I'm aiming for what he could be. As I mean, let's put it this way. If that's him injured, you wouldn't want to see him at 100%, because it didn't look like there was anything wrong with him, mate. He was really, really good. I'm not suggesting anyone goes and buys him because he's a risk.
I don't want that dilemma in my life, mate, to be honest with you.
Well, I trod this path a little while ago and I wildcarded in between and still kept him, Serge. So I'm at peace with the decision I've made. Yes, I probably will start him this weekend. As said, I may well captain Watkins. We know what happened the last time Villa played Sheffield United. But I also use the narrative of what I said. It's a home game. And to be honest, Sheffield United got to start be targeting points. Not that they went to Villa and don't just assume you're going to lose. Not at all. But they'll have to play a little bit more open than they did at Villa Park, I think. And if Bailey starts, which I'm obviously not going to know at deadline, then I think, yeah, Watkins could have some joy in this, actually. And I think Bailey could have some joy in this as well. They need to sort out those wide areas better. That with Cash and Moreno both playing, that it won't stick for me. It's not to say they won't do it again this weekend because the opponent, but I don't think that'll stick. And Pau Torre has been a big miss for them. And he's a big miss for my FPL team at the moment. It's becoming a pain in the arse because we don't really know what's going on.
Right. Let's move to Wednesday night, James, and Man City 3, Burnley 1. That customary late consolation goal for Burnley. Why the City do it to us? But then I've avoided City
defence. You already know.
I've avoided City defence for the entire season, to be honest with you. So I'm happy to... Well, apart from I started the season with John Stones, but never got any minutes because he was injured. And I have no desire... It leaves me no desire to want to go there defensively with Man City at the moment, even though there probably will be some clean sheets in there. Yeah.
Ironically, though, the best one to go and get... I'm sorry, and I'm not even saying it as a joke, is Kyle Walker.
Yeah.
Because now he's had the break as well. You'd think, well, that's it. He's going to play the majority of the games. But they're all fit. Stones, Akanji, they're all available now. I said this on a few bits yesterday and I said it to you this morning as well. I think they'll pick a taller team at Brentford because of the opponent. So I wouldn't expect to be seeing Rico Lewis again at right back. Doesn't mean Walker definitely plays. He could play John Stones in that position. He can't even play Akanji in that position. Every single player in the squad is fit.
Wow.
Every single one. So, you know, there is going to be rotation at points, particularly as the fixtures get closer together. I think identifying which defensive player makes it tough. I think when we've looked at City this year, we've often felt picking the right defensive one was more difficult anyway. Not even in the sense that it's not like a Cancelo standout that we've had in the past. Just it actually felt like defensively they had more options than offensively. Now that De Bruyne's back, you've got Oscar Bob being integrated. I understand even Matias Nunes played quite well on Wednesday night. Like, there's loads of options there. Loads. So it's probably as usual. Pick your poison and be at peace with it. I've seen people talking about moving, like, Foden to De Bruyne this week. And I just wouldn't be in a rush to do that.
Yeah, I don't like sideways moves. And I've got Julian Alvarez still sitting there. I'm still going to start him. He may be the one that makes way for Erling Haaland, but I still start.
I think he'll be the most captain player, I think.
Alvarez?
Week. No, De Bruyne.
Oh, De Bruyne.
I think, yeah. Okay. I think with Alvarez, there'll be enough nervousness of Haaland take his place.
Yeah, yeah.
Most people will be looking at De Bruyne now going, yeah, that's going to play. Yeah, I mean, his EO was up to about 70% his top 10K.
Okay. So quite a lot had gone into him. Yeah, even Live FPL did tell me that the player that hurt my rank the most was Kevin De Bruyne.
So I would probably, I would imagine for those who've gone De Bruyne, I mean, yeah, I'd captain De Bruyne over Watkins at this minute, yeah. So I'd imagine most people would be thinking, right, that's a saving of headache unless there's clear Haaland info, which we can't expect, right? And these guys are giving leaks, and people like leaks, people dislike leaks, use them, don't use them, whatever. I don't know anyone's going to know the team Saturday morning for Monday night. I don't know anyone's going to know.
Yeah, they might know an intended team.
Saturday morning to Monday night.
It's a long...
It's not realistic to expect anything tomorrow.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I'd be dubious about it anyway because there's so much that can change. The train on Saturday, Sunday. So, by the way, if someone does tweet and say, oh, yeah, De Bruyne's starting Monday or something, yeah, and then he doesn't rock up, yeah, be in mind there's training sessions in between and people can get niggles and shit like that can happen between leaking and deadlines. And there's always a danger of that if you're getting something 24 hours before as well. What I would say on Foden, as much as I probably wouldn't make that sideways move, it wouldn't be the one I go and buy at the moment. Now, I'd ease off that. I think my general view on City would be this week, unless you're buying De Bruyne or Haaland specifically, don't go there for now. Seek that bit more of information for Monday. Seek in terms of, is it absolutely necessary, bearing in mind who knows if Liverpool are going to double in 25 now or not. It might give you more time where you can make sure I've got the right City free. So if you take me at the moment, I've got Foden, Alvarez, Haaland, right? Yeah. There's no way I'd be looking at those three players playing twice in the double. Probably be thinking Haaland gets two and the other two probably play once.
But they will come off the bench.
Exactly that.
So they'll get enough minutes across.
So I probably at the moment would go, that's my three. It'll be what it'll be. Because my priority ideally is going to be probably wanting to get Liverpool players and making sure I'm getting the right
Chelsea, Tottenham.
Exactly that. Whereas, obviously, if the Liverpool double doesn't happen, I might be sitting there this time next week thinking, well, that's not the right City player. I can move it.
Yeah.
Now it'll
be a luxury.
Now I'll go Alvarez to Tony. Oh, okay, Salah's not fit. Right, I definitely want to force De Bruyne in, for example. That I don't want to do at this minute in time. So I'm comfortable with what I've gone. And I think most should probably take a similar decision. The big one is, do we buy Haaland now or wait? I think it's exactly what I'd said on my stream on Tuesday night. This has come down to gut feeling at this moment. Like, if you can sit there and you can say, I think he'll start, buy him, if you're that way. If you don't think that, don't. Also, the biggest thing is going to be dependent on who you sell, right? So in the case of, say what you and I had going into this week, Alvarez, same problem. I wouldn't want to go Alvarez to Haaland at this moment because it could be exactly as it was the other night. I wouldn't want to sell Watkins playing at Sheffield United. I wouldn't want to sell Solanke playing at Home to Forest. So if you've got that, which people might even describe as maybe even the optimum three going into this week, then I'm not selling any of them.
Kick it forward a week.
If I'm sitting there with João Pedro, who's probably going to get ruled out and I have the money in the bank, I'm probably going to gamble it and just get him in.
Agreed.
If I'm sitting there with Darwin Nunez tomorrow morning and he's a doubt for the weekend,
and it's Arsenal, and there's no and there's a blank couple of weeks
no announcement of the Liverpool-Luton game, then maybe you can expendable. Maybe make a call to move that on.
Yeah, understood. No interest in Burnley at all?
No. What I'll just add on them is Vincent Kompany's not being helpful at the moment in terms of team news or some of the enabling players. I know people keep asking about Charlie Taylor. And he's just not giving anything away. Like in his presser on Tuesday, he was asked about six players who were injured and he said there will be some good news from that. Now, the good news from that was that Sander Berger played, but none of the others were back available. And it's similar from him going into this weekend, I think, as well. So all I know is ahead of my Game Week 21 deadline stream, someone came on my stream and said Charlie Taylor had a really bad neck injury and was likely to be out for 2 months. But I've got nothing to back that up. But for whatever reason, he's not giving anything away. Do you remember a couple of weeks ago, he said, I'm going to blame my press officer. My press officer told me not to say something. Things like that make you feel like, what's the point of even...
Agreed.
Don't even do the press conference. Just say, sorry. It's like an obligation for what?
Yeah, there's plenty that are like that in terms of managers not giving a lot away. For the first time, rarely do you ever see a team score their XG. Tottenham 3, Brentford 2, your XG was 3. And you scored 3.
That's higher than it felt watching the game. let's say. But then Brentford's also was as well.
Yeah.
Strange game. Obviously, I was at the game. Brentford, hang on. I don't know how to define this. I was going to say Brentford played well first half. They did, but it wasn't like Brentford outplayed us.
But
they deserved their lead on opportunities. And the thing is with Brentford, it's like, I know if I go and watch Tottenham play Brentford, the worst thing that can happen is to go 1-0 down. They are an absolute pig to play against if you're losing. You know that, didn't you, boss? Mm. But I'm also with the predetermined kind of mindset in my mind. Don't get frustrated. Because you know what it's going to be like. Now, of course, 90% of the rest of the crowd can't deal with that.
No.
I admire Neil. I want to look down the camera and say, I admire Neil Maupay's shithousery. Admire it.
Yeah. No, I don't. I don't like the guy.
But he was obviously going to get it back with both barrels
of course.
Well, right?
Yeah,
they created... It's interesting. I had a discussion with Clayton on Wednesday about Man City killing the atmosphere at Tottenham on Friday night. One thing about shithousing is it does get everyone up.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Agreed.
And when we equalised, you could feel the quickly momentum. And obviously, we scored three in seven or eight minutes. Yeah. But yeah, Brentford's, I've been concerned about them recently. They certainly didn't look like a team that I'd be fearful would get relegated. Let's put it that way. Having Tony back amongst that is obviously really important. They played basically a hybrid back four / back three where Ben Mee would move to left back and King Lewis Potter, who was dangerous but never felt like he was going to have kind of an end product on him, basically moved left wing back to left wing. Ross left alternated between right wing back and right back. They got their best midfield three on the pitch at the moment, which is important. Norgaard, Jensen and Janelt, that's the favoured best three. And I think they've got the back three together now as well, which would be favoured as well. So Bar, Bumo, Vissa being back from
Rico
AFCON.
Henry.
The Rico Henry's a season long, and obviously Aaron Hickey is a loss. So other than the forward areas and the two wide positions, at least their spine is fixed now, so that's going to make them stronger. They'll give City a game on Monday, but I wouldn't foresee them getting any points out of it. For my team, Jekyll and Hyde stuff. I mean, basically, Serge, we played well for 25 minutes. We started the game. We started the game really well. In fact, we started both halves really well.
And if the ball goes in the back of the net, it's great. And if it doesn't, you do. I've felt that with, like, even when we played against you, you start really well and it's a bit demoralising. But as the game goes on and the opposition gets settled in, then you think, actually, yeah, there is opportunities against these. And it's proved again, like, you've come out of this winning.
How many times you hear me saying the last couple of weeks, Tony will get a big chance against us? I mean, it helps when Destiny just literally passes him the ball and puts him through one-on-one.
Not as easy as Calvin Phillips setting up Solanke, though.
Similar. Yeah, that's both our teams have put on brilliant assists for two of the deadliest forwards in the league at the moment in Solanke and Tony. Udogie had a really strange game. Forget the back pass in the moment. I thought in the first half it was his worst 45 minutes for Tottenham. And yeah, he's ended up playing a pivotal role in winning the game with his driving runs.
Which is big.
That have ended up obviously scoring a goal. And having quite a big involvement in the third goal as well. So he'd had some really good moments, but his general play, he just played nervous all through the game. He normally got this upper body strength that he holds people off and stuff. He kept running into trouble. A really strange game. So we looked more vulnerable, ironically, on Wednesday than we did, say, against City last Friday. Bentancur and Maddison kept getting on each other's toes, which is really strange to say because Bentancur played as the six with Oliver Skip a little bit ahead to the right and Maddison a lot more ahead, obviously, kind of this left half space position. But Maddison kept coming so deep and it felt like when we were in possession, Maddison and Bentancur were playing the same roles and kind of getting in each other's way. And Ange, basically, I think won the game by taking Bentancur off was a really, really big call because Højbjerg, just such a different profile player. And obviously he moved Kulusevski into a more central area. Kulusevski also had a very, very quiet game. He moved him into a central area. So what ironically happened was the change won us the game. So you change the game, you go Kulusevski and Maddison as 10s. You bring Johnson on, you've got these two flyers on the wing and obviously Richarlison in front. You go, right, we are going for it. It's not like the fullbacks are going to sit back. And obviously within 10 minutes, we've got the game won. But the problem was, because he taken Bentancur and Skip off, he didn't have anything available to call on like a Sara or a Bissouma to then shut it back down again. So the game just stayed open. And it was like, well, we'll outgun you, basically. So I think at 3-1, we should have shut the game back down, but he didn't have the personnel to do it. Saar being back for Everton tomorrow, I touch wood, is obviously Senegal out. It's going to be really, really important for us. And I very much hope he starts. It'll make a difference for us in terms of particularly on transition, both with and without the ball. Pleased that Johnson scored, because I and a lot of Tottenham fans give him a lot of stick recently. He was in the right place at the right time. He actually times his movement on the back post extremely well and was lively when he came on. But I think it helped that he came into a team that was chasing rather than, you know, balled on. The game changed. If you look at the goals, they're all kind of on the move and sweeping forward, whereas before we'd had this block that we couldn't break down. And that's a problem that we face. Arsenal face similar challenges. When you can play from deeper positions and cut men out of the game and you're running at speed, yeah, teams like Tottenham and Arsenal will kill you. Werner was...
Turbo Timo.
He was brilliant. He was really good. He still doesn't strike me that if he gets in a position he's going to shoot, I wouldn't for a second think he's going to score ever. But he was really direct in his running. He worked really hard defensively off the ball as well. Carried a threat and a purpose. His movement off the ball is really good. Tottenham need to send him away quickly. His end product will be erratic. He has now made 3 assists in his 3 games for Tottenham. It was really good. The fans have taken to him. He's really likable. When you hear him speak, he did an interview after the game. He just comes across as someone you think, I want you to do well, mate, even if you might not be here permanently. But if he carries on the way he played on Wednesday night, Tottenham will sign him permanently in the summer. That's going to be his position primarily, his left wing. Of course, if Sonny's back, he plays Australia later today, could in theory be back next week. I don't know what happens there. I don't know the answer because you certainly wouldn't be taking Richarlison out of the team at the moment.
No, he's been banging in the goals.
You could move Werner to the right and then...
Kudus
into the central
area.
Yeah, but
these are good problems to have at the end of the day.
It's a little bit over the top. Well, these are issues that... These are problems that we haven't had. To be able to be in this position where we go, right, this isn't working, like on Wednesday, and go, right, we're going to shove this about, we're taking two off, we're bringing, you know, Højbjerg and Johnson into the game rather than, with respect, bringing players on who are perhaps not of the required level for playing for a team that wants to qualify for the Champions League. So... yeah, Ange won the game, but his then inability to then be able to change it again nearly cost us the game.
Liverpool 4, Chelsea 1. I did think Liverpool at home at Anfield could potentially do some damage. And obviously there's a missed penalty in there as well, so it could have been even worse. Having said that, Chelsea may feel that they could have, should have had a penalty.
I think they're both penalties. I think even the Gallagher one, for me, is a penalty in the first half.
So... you could argue it both ways. It could have ended up 5-3 or whatever you want to, but that could have been a haul for Cole Palmer.
Well, it also could have ended 8-1.
Yeah, that's also true.
So
Liverpool relentless at the moment. I just think they're
on it.
They're on it. And Conor Bradley, Fabian Scher, hold my beer type stuff, isn't it? A 21 pointer coming in. No one's going there really, are they? Because Trent did come off the bench.
Oh, people will go there.
The bots will go there.
People will go there. You've got a 4 million defensive Liverpool asset who has just hauled, and he also got good returns. It doesn't obviously fantasy related, but he got good returns against Norwich at the weekend as well.
Oh, okay, yeah, true.
So what he's done, he's shown himself capable of, that's an option now for Liverpool. That if Trent's unavailable next, they go, right, well, this kid's at right back is good enough. Now you have to change the way you play, right? Trent, we know now, just goes and drifts into centre midfield, centre back position, basically whatever he wants in terms of how he goes and runs the football match for Liverpool. You ain't going to ask Conor Bradley to do that.
No.
So you're not the same player. You could look at Bradley, like we used to call Nico Williams, Baby Trent. I mean, that looks stupid now, doesn't it? This guy may be more so in terms of that directness down the flank, i.e. Baby Trent in terms of playing how Trent used to play. Trent is not like that anymore in the same way.
No.
So you can't compare them. So what a lot of people think and want to know is like, so Bradley's done so well, does it mean Trent goes into midfield now? Well, I think that would only happen under the circumstance that Alexis McAllister's unavailable.
Okay.
Not say only, but primarily, he's not going to move McAllister out the sixth position, and he ain't going to move Szoboszlai out the right side at eighth position either. So Trent will still play right back, and he'll go into his area and join McAllister and do what he wants to do. I would be very surprised, honestly, if Conor Bradley started at Arsenal. I know it's harsh, but you can dip the kid in and say, look, well done, mate. That's brilliant. You are now a part of this first team squad and you've earned it, and there will be more opportunities for you. Especially if Liverpool at the end of the season have to play Thursday, Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday, then yeah, there'll be opportunities. Don't worry about it. But yeah, I imagine Trent will come back in. I think he'll be unlucky, but he'll get left out at Arsenal, I think.
And Nunes, that would be the right thing to do.
Well, that's up to Klopp, isn't it?
Yep.
Maybe Klopp will think different. But I imagine Trent will come back in. There'll be a lot of tactical manoeuvres and stuff in that game. And having someone like
Chess,
Trent...
trying to outmanoeuvre each other.
Yeah, I'd be very surprised if he doesn't play, personally. Nunes now, Suj, I don't know if you've heard or seen the stat, has now hit woodwork in all competitions this season 12 times. Nico laughed behind the camera. It gets funnier, mate. No other player in the Premier League has done that more than 4 times.
In a season?
No, this season.
Oh, this season.
So... okay. In all competitions, and admittedly that means he's played more games than a lot of players, but he has hit the woodwork 3 times more than any other player. Takes some doing that. He is a big doubt for Sunday. Jurgen Klopp said that he's had a scan on his foot and it's all clear. Basically, he said they need to be able to get his foot in the boat. So he's obviously got some form of swelling in his foot or his ankle.
Right.
Which is causing the problem. It's not serious damage, but therefore he's a doubt for Sunday. And to go back to the point on the tactical, he had an inkling that he might not start anyway, and Gakpo might play a more kind of Firmino-like role in the game and use Nunes later on, when perhaps it might open up a bit more. And I could see Klopp doing that possibly anyway, and then keeping Jota and Diaz in the wide roles. And it was very much Nunes as a nine the other night. I still love him. It's like he had that little quiet period, and now he's back on it again, Nunes. You know what you're going to get, but...
It's not for me. The inconsistency would drive me crazy, whereas Jota, for example, that I owned for so many weeks in fantasy, consistency, minutes, points per minute, fine. If Jota misses out and doesn't play, I won't be mad at him, whereas Nunes, I would just rage. Like, I've got no rapport built with him.
He's finished on 2 points, right?
Yeah.
He could have easily finished on, like, 20 plus.
Yeah. I've no interest in Darwin Nunez. I don't know what would need to happen for me to buy him, but that wasn't enough.
He's not. I mean, I wouldn't buy him now, definitely not. But could I look at him next week? Yeah, maybe.
If the double's on.
For me, it would need that. Yeah. But if the double's on. It might be that I look next week and go, yeah, do you know what? I'm going to chase this and go Watkins to Nunez for a couple of weeks. Yes, I might decide to do that next week. I certainly wouldn't this week. And as said previously, I can get why people would move him to Haaland if that's what they want to do. Yes, I think there's a possibility that he might not start the weekend. For Chelsea, that's nearly their strongest team, isn't it?
Like Reece James, maybe?
Sanchez. I mean, Nkunku, yeah, sure, has not started. What I mean is, like, in terms of the midfield area... You would expect
Caicedo and Enzo as a two in there. In front of Gallagher it. Probably is right. I'd probably say Nkunku instead of Madueke.
I think this would be a controversial call. I speak about him a lot. I think they should take Thiago Silva out of the team now.
Well, I think the guy is 40. It's time for him to retire.
I think look, and I always feel to justify. He's one of the best defenders I've ever seen, but Chelsea are having to play constantly to his beat, basically. You can look, if you didn't know whether Silva's going to play left side or the right side centre back, you only have to look at who's playing at full back and you'll know, because it'll be a centre back playing on the outside of him every time. So if they wanted to put themselves in a position where they go, right, let's sit Caicedo and Gallagher deeper and let's get Chilwell and Gusto playing as the full backs and a lot more offensively. And I'm pretty sure every Chelsea fan just listened to that and went, I'd like to see that. You can't.
With Thiago Silva in
there. Can't. That's, I think, the decision that he's making. And therefore, I think there should come a point where Chelsea start looking at it and going, well, are we ever going to trust, like, Badiashil and this society to play together? Admittedly, Colwell, actually, in fairness, obviously, was a miss the other night as well. But at the moment, as it stands, Chilwell and Gusto, I think, will only play together in the fullback roles if Thiago Silva doesn't play.
Right.
So, like, I don't know whether to play Gusto this week or not, because I've no idea which way Pochettino will deem it. If Colwell's back, that possibly increases the potential for Gusto maybe to play at right back, because Colwell's natural at left back. I don't think he really wants to play Badiashil there. So if Colwell's not back, he's going, well, I can play Disasai at right back, play Badiashil left of Silva, and then push Chilwell on from left back. So, I mean, they're jumping around Silva, like it or not, at the moment, unfortunately. And Nkunku really needs an eye kits on. I'm telling you, this kid will score goals.
Yeah, but when's he going to get?
Well, the thing is, as well, because they blank in 26, you've got what, City away in 25. Even if the game goes on in 29, it's Arsenal away. Like the run, there's some good fixtures in there, but there's enough bad ones that's off putting. I think if he stays fit and proves himself over the next 6 weeks or so, I think he'll be extremely popular for when people wildcard after the international break.
Yep. Okay, let's move on to last night's fixtures. Starting with West Ham 1, Bournemouth 1. I mean, we can spend like 2 minutes on this game, mate.
Go on then.
It's awful. awful. Like West Ham, it just feels like a jigsaw puzzle that the pieces don't fit together.
That's really well said.
I don't understand how...
You play James Ward-Prowse as a left winger.
We are above.
No, me neither.
Manchester United, Newcastle, Brighton and Chelsea. We have more points than all of them so far this season.
You're more reliable.
This is it, right?
You're more reliable.
You can
than all
say what
teams.
You want. We didn't lose yesterday. You can say what you want about Sheffield United. We didn't lose against Sheffield United. Like, if it comes to it, we'll grind out. And these little points here and there, chipping away. Like, there's a clear divide
have
now
you
between
40 points yet.
We are 4 points away, James. There is a clear gap between us and Aston Villa of like 8 points
I
now.
I was going to say, there's a clear gap between us and Luton. No.
There's like 7 points between us and Villa. So there's top five, and then there's us, Man United, Chelsea, Newcastle,
and they're all
Brighton.
Right behind you now.
They are, I mean, 4 points to Brighton and stuff. But yeah, of course. But unlike Manchester United and Newcastle, we've
what
got European football,
what
mate.
What, United behind you?
I think it was 2 points, mate.
United go above you if they beat you Sunday.
It is 1 point now.
Oh, right. Yeah, so yeah, definitely.
Yeah. They
and how many Newcastle
we'll
behind?
Four clear. Newcastle is tied with Brighton 4 points behind.
Okay. But then, so they could close to a point over this
bit
weekend.
Bit of breathing
maybe.
Room. But still, relative to the performance you saw yesterday, the original question stands, how are we above these guys? Because we've been awful for certain games.
Because you're consistent.
Here. Yeah, consistently.
You're difficult to beat. How many games have you lost?
I couldn't tell you. I'll have a look at the standings. I mean, people have been looking at it from an FPL point of view. I couldn't justify buying anybody from West Ham at the moment. They could have just picked up an assist again.
United and Arsenal in the next two anyway.
It's just a no-go. And Dominic Solanke did return, but other than that, they had a few chances, Bournemouth, but it wasn't a particularly end-to-end chances-stacked game.
No, I only watched the first half, so I can't really comment on the second.
It didn't get any better. West Ham were better in the second half.
Definitely penalty, by the way.
Yeah. We were better in the second half, but
marginal. I didn't watch the second half. I watched the last 10 minutes or so of the second half while it was kind of half-time of Wolves-Man United. And at that point, I could see Bowen had gone back out on the right.
Yeah,
Kudus was on the left. And Ings was up front. And I went, that makes so much more sense. When I saw your team, I thought diamond. I thought this it'll be James Ward-Prowse at the top of the diamond. He'll play Alvarez as the deepest. And then he'll play the other two, Phillips
That's
and Suchek.
That's not what I thought.
No? What did you think?
I thought 4-2-3-1 with Alvarez and Phillips as two. Ward-Prowse left. Suchek as a number 10 who'll press and push on high. Kudus on the right.
And that's basically what it was.
Mm.
James Ward-Prowse on the left. Mm.
It's the graveyard. It's where West Ham players go to. It's like, and I've heard a few people describe it this way. When Moyes doesn't know what to do with a player, or he doesn't want to drop him, like Paqueta or what have you, left wing is where he goes to play him, four nouns or whatever in the past. If he doesn't know what to do with you, left wing is where he'll put you because he's got no other ideas what to do over there. So. Yeah, wasn't a great game at all. Look, Dominic Solanke, 13 goals now. Decent for him. Like West Ham, I'd sum up and say I wouldn't buy anyone right now. Bournemouth, if you've got Solanke, you hold, don't you?
Oh, definitely this week, yeah. Yeah, I think it was an easier one for us to make the call last week. This week, that Solanke to Haaland move this week would be way tougher. Forest at home. I mean, it's captainable this week. That's a big difference. If someone said to me, I want to captain Dominic Solanke this week, I go, good luck.
Go for it.
Good luck, yeah. I wouldn't have a problem with that at all. He's in good form, consistent. He set up the chance for Semenyo. Should have made it 2-0 and stuff as well. Yeah, a good side. I think good result for them after the defeats to Tottenham and Liverpool might have dented a bit. Reality is, before those games, they were dispatching everybody that they were better than. And they're better than Forest. So I would expect them to win on Sunday, to be perfectly honest. Semenyo being back, I mean, you can put him into that enabling category, but it's possibly a bit less useful than Adebayo or Breuer, subject to what you want to do and injuries to others over future weeks. They'll stay on mine, though, because they might be, as we've covered earlier in the week, they might be the one that's got back-to-back doubles at the end of the season, right?
Mm.
So I think, you know, keep an eye on them. Going forward, Kelly played left back, but might have possibly picked up a problem. I heard maybe James Hill, who stood in the Liverpool games, out for about 6 weeks, and Milos Kerkez might get another run. Adam Smith was back, but that's competitive with Aarons. What I do know is with them, those two centre backs, and this will be interesting for doubles later on, those two centre backs, Senesi and Zabarnia, particularly Zabarnia, I think of the two, will almost definitely play the games in the running. I should think. Like, you're looking for doublers like there's probably not enough in it to gamble on a Kirkez or Aarons when he's back. It probably will be go for one of the centre backs if or when it looks like you should do so. But that moment's not now, I don't think.
That. And last but not least, the car crash of the game week was obviously Wolves 3, Manchester United 4. United purring 2-0 up.
They were great. And for an hour, they were great, Man United, honestly.
Then it turned into a little bit of a madness.
They put on a really good display.
I look at their starting 11 and I almost think, okay, is that probably their best 11, close, maybe?
Close.
Garnacho out on the right, debatable. And whether or not Kobe Mino, or whether you'd argue Mason Mount or Christian Eriksen might be better in that position. But I do think that's the best.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Probably, yeah. Be better if Onana didn't leave enough room for buses to go in at the near post, but that's a different problem altogether. Yes, that probably is the strongest 11. So, and look, we have to say, in fairness to Ten Hag, he has said a lot. When the team's back together,
judge us then.
Yeah, and so we can only judge it on the last game and say that team played well, including Rashford, who looked up for it. I'll tell you what I would say about him still, though. Took the goal ever so well. When he's running at people, it seems to be over-deciding, like not getting his shots away. Just want him to get it out of his feet and shoot.
Just hit it.
You think about that, like that goal he scored for England against Italy a couple of months ago. Just step inside. Don't overthink it. It feels like he's taking an extra touch. Or like that, the goal he scores comes back to him. It's nothing to think about. Just roll it in, basically. He's worth keeping an eye on. All I'd say is he looked more at it last night, but still taking too many touches, I think, in the final third. But as I said, they played really well in the first hour. The winning goal, I think anybody watching it live, I can't speak for everybody, but certainly how I felt, is a young boy, Mino. And the goal is outrageous. I think it's one of the best moments of the season, actually, from a neutral perspective. After he did the nutmeg and stepped inside, the angle we had, we could all see the shot. I didn't think he wouldn't score. Like, I thought he'll score there, even though it was on the edge of the box and he's a young boy. You take that responsibility as a kid when you've got your Fernandes next to you and stuff.
Yeah,
what a talent. Brilliant, brilliant goal. And that came just after United had completely blown the game because, as said, they played really well for an hour. Once Wolves got their own dubious penalty, yes, Wolves fans, you got a dubious decision. Now, you've had enough go against you, admittedly. I don't want to say United were on the ropes, but you even though that you thought, they've missed so many chances here, United. It might bite them. Then they scored again fairly quickly through McTominay. But then even then, Kilman scored and it's like 6 minutes to go. Then there's like 9 minutes added time. You're thinking, I know this United team could buckle. And it did.
Yeah.
It did buckle. The equalising goal they concede is, put it this way, if it was a goal conceded by Tottenham, I'm not sure I'd be able to defend it. Because they overcommit players going forward in the 94th minute for a set piece. Against a team that's got people like Neto, who, if you give space, Neto, Cunha, these guys are real good ball carriers.
Yep.
Shut the game down a little bit. But like all the centre-backs, Maguire's on, Evans on, they've all gone forward and stuff. Yeah. But they did deserve to win, no doubt about it. Wolves players are definitely worth keeping an eye on. I think they'll become quite a bit of a topic heading into 26 because they've got Sheffield United at home. So I think that in itself will create some interest where people want to look at Neto's. Huang will be back by that point. Yeah, they're worth keeping an eye on. I don't understand.
So I think they're going to give Chelsea a tough game this weekend.
Yeah, I don't particularly doubt that. They'll be better off if Ryan Aitnori plays, is what I was going to say. Doherty had a bad day. They decided to switch him and Semedo for a bit earlier in the game because, to be honest, Doherty was just struggling so much. I spoke numerous times about the link and the movement between systems worked so much better with Aitnori playing. I assumed, having been a sub at West Brom, that he'd have played. Maybe his fitness is a little bit short. And I don't know if there's a clue there to other players coming back from AFCON and even the Asia Cup, in the sense that perhaps you can't be sure the demands on Premier League football, you can't be sure that these players are being put through the same demands in their training. That's not to say that is the case, but I can't think why Aitnori didn't start for Wolves last night. I'm pretty sure he'll start at Chelsea.
Well, we shall find out, won't we, as the weekend rolls out. James, normally at this point, once we've wrapped up the games, I say, what content have people got to look forward to the rest of the week? Nothing is your answer.
No, you haven't even got a deadline stream. Sorry, I'm getting up at 4:45 to go to Everton tomorrow morning.
Yeah, there are others that do deadline streams. Feel free to watch them. We're not we're not trying to create a monopoly here. Feel free to ask others your repetitive questions instead of getting abuse from James for asking them.
Yeah, but they know I'll answer it. The others might not.
Indeed. With the tight turnaround, James, I'm having a quick flick through some of the questions that we've had in on the internet. There isn't a huge amount. A few people just stating statements like, I'm going to go rogue and start Trent and Bradley. Go for it.
Next.
Go for it. FPL Shriek only scored 35 this week. Is it time to delete the app? No. I should never use the app anyway. Always go to the mobile website.
Next.
Is my opinion.
Yeah. Play it your way.
Yes. If Liverpool don't double in 25, do we look towards KDB rather than Salah? I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty straightforward, isn't it? Can KDB, Foden, Alvarez and Haaland all coexist? There'll be a game where they're all four play and they'll win 6-0.
Yes, but that means Foden holding the touchline.
Alex, here's one for you, James. What's your favourite holiday destination?
Amsterdam. We've been to Mallorca a few times.
Mallorca, where the water don't taste like it. Water. Yeah. I'm going to say the best place I've ever been is the Maldives, I'd say, but that was pretty lucky to be able to go. Nico's like, yeah, man. But Fiji was pretty good as well.
Fuck you.
On my honeymoon.
We could only afford the easy jet.
And
you don't pay me enough.
And last but not least, the Bombardier. If you were on death row, what would be your final meal? We've had that plenty. I know what you'd answer. Kebab. You always said kebabs your go-to. Chicken shish.
I'd go to chicken, mate, honestly.
Chicken as your final meal.
Yeah, because as well, I'm on Tottenham High Road. I'm at home, so yeah.
Yeah, I've always been sausage, chips and beans, James, would be my death row meal. So sausage, chips and beans. Keep it nice and simple. Yeah, indeed. I rattle through some of them. We haven't had too many others on the internet. And obviously people got lots to think about before the deadline, which is now less than 24 hours away. It leads me to say good luck this weekend with your fantasy teams, whichever formats you're playing, particularly with FPL. Stay safe. Be kind to each other, as James says. You reiterate that point. Ciao for now.
Thanks, everyone. Yeah, be nice to each other. Play it your way. Cue music, please, man child.
What do we say at the start, James? If you've got nothing nice to say,
don't fucking say nothing.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Sports Social Podcast Network.